Let thy soul be awakened.
So we're not going to do that photo shoot outside?
I'm all for it, but I don't think where we are right now doing a naked photo shoot with like being covered just by a couple of twigs and branches by the lake is a good idea because it's on the lake so you can see other houses.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not, it's way more private than Los Angeles, but it's for Vermont, I don't think it's that private.
Yeah.
Like we could see a whole city across the way.
I know. But there's just these beautiful loose branches that fell off the trees last night in the midst of 55 mile per hour winds. And I was like, okay, this is the moment.
Great idea. So I think let's just move on from that. It's just not happening here.
Okay.
We can still, I mean, a lot of these houses are probably vacation rentals, but you know, you could still see people.
Yeah, there was a big, I was about to set up the, I was staging the whole thing because I wanted to bring in a white sheet and to have it as a backdrop. And there was a pickup truck of two men that drove by and I was like, I'm not doing this.
A pickup truck where?
Here.
In the...
the neighbors. The neighbors have a pickup truck.
I've never noticed.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of pickup trucks, so don't worry. You'll be able to find twigs again. It'll all come together
in a
more private spot. And you have all those great pictures that Hillary took.
I know.
We have.
I just wanted to take more because I'm growing and it's exciting.
We have a friend, Hillary, who started following my stuff on Instagram and then started following your stuff. And then we just have been texting a lot. And then she started taking the workshops and then... she lives in Hudson, New York, which isn't too far from us, relatively speaking, especially compared to LA.
Yeah.
And so she's a great photographer. And she did, I'm trying to give her a shout out, but she doesn't listen to the podcast because she's deaf.
Yeah.
And I sort of assumed that, oh, well, everything probably gets transcribed for deaf people, or they just plug it into their computer and it'll just, voice capture or caption.
Yeah. I kind of assumed the same
thing. And she said that not in the case with podcasts, and she's just had to accept that the podcasts aren't really a part of her life. But I like having a deaf friend because then I can ask questions about it
in the
community.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially from a perspective, she's also a filmmaker. So from the perspective of how editing is done on television shows and films, everything happens so much faster than if you're watching older movies. No,
what she said was in modern films.
In modern
TV in particular. Everything's just jump cut. It's fast. It's boom, 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 boom. And you watch older films and they stayed on the shot for longer.
Yeah.
You could read lips.
Exactly.
So she said she grew up really having to immerse herself in foreign films, which sound like a nightmare.
Oh, and I loved it.
For you, your fantasy.
I want her to put together a list for me of
but
films
to watch.
But now
she's like all artsy and cool. It's probably because she had to watch films with subtitles.
Yeah, Fanny and Alexander.
But she's cool and a great photographer. And we did transcribe one episode for her, but it's really expensive. So hopefully,
if anyone knows of a transcription service that's more affordable, I mean, she's even looking into it for us too.
Yeah. Or is anybody deaf listening? If you know for deaf community services that help with podcasts to transcribe them, would be great. Or hopefully, if we get more sponsors.
Yes.
On a consistent regular basis, which you actually just signed a couple of. So we're just waiting to finalize the paperwork and get the ad copies. So I'm grateful for that. But as it grows, it would be really cool. Cause I just sort of assumed through technology nowadays, but she'll actually watch the workshops and, read my lips from like a Zoom call, and a lot of the stuff that I talk about is Kabbalah and other terms, and you know, Karanzin, the demon of the abyss, 333. So I always wonder what I didn't realize that she's lip or lip reading the yeah. whole thing. So there's just some terms that you're not going to come across in English. But she seems to grasp it. She said there's just definitely a few things that are like, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
But it is amazing, though. I'm fascinated by her acuity of analyzing movement. She could still feel some sounds.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Like, you wouldn't know. Like, she can just hang out. You wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. You just have to make a point to look at her when you're speaking.
Yes.
So it seems like a crazy superpower.
I notice that I don't interrupt you as much either if we're all in the same room.
It's great. If you want to, if you're married and you don't want to get interrupted, just have your deaf friend over.
Yeah.
Or befriend a
deaf person.
I have
to wait for you to finish your statement. And then I'm like, wait, I want to say something.
Well, I wish she was here for this pod episode. Anyhow, she's a wonderful person. She's a great actor, great filmmaker.
Great photographer. Yeah, her name is Hilary Bach.
Yeah, so look her stuff up. She's been in some great films. She yeah. was actually in The Sound of Metal or whatever that.
She was. And she was in a High Maintenance episode, which we love that
we,
show.
Yeah, I want to rewatch that one because yeah. I didn't know her then, so I didn't yeah. know. But she's in a lot of. Actually, The East is one of my favorite movies
mm-hmm.
About environmental terrorists.
Okay.
Or people defending the environment. But you definitely are rooting for them. I thought it was.
Isn't it about like. Aren't they like dumpster divers too?
I don't remember that. Probably. Okay. Most yeah. environmentalists are dumpster divers.
Yeah.
That's how Greta Thunberg got her start.
No.
Actually through dumpster diving. Yeah. I actually just started a book called Apocalypse Never, which I'm going to come back with notes because I got sidetracked by another book called The Moth with the Iron Lung, mm-hmm. which is the breakdown. It's like called the biography of polio. Which the first symptoms of polio on a mass scale happened in Rutland, Vermont in like 1880-something.
That's wild.
Yeah, but the tie-in that this book is unraveling has to do with pesticides used at that time, which blew my mind because the fantasy notion is, oh, eat food the way like our great-grandparents did. And it turned out our great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents were eating lead arsenic pesticide. Ugh. It was called Paris Green. And literally people are consuming like copious amounts of lead and arsenic. I also didn't know that mercury was prescribed all the time medicinally, especially to children, to like clean out the bowels.
What?
In particular for tooth infections. So the main medicines, the pharmacology then, yeah. probably now too on some level, yeah. but was mercury and arsenic. And then pesticides were lead and arsenic. And so, you know.
Wow.
And the Vermont's very rural. It's probably, Rutland probably looks the same. And such an unfortunate name for a town.
I know.
I swear, if you're going to name towns and you want to name it after, like, you, your last name better be kind of cool or at least not be shitty.
Well, what about Dummerston?
Dummerston.
It's like, no.
You know, there's an Athol, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And this a Belchertown, Massachusetts.
I only knew that because of you.
Well, I only know that because my cousin grew up around there. So really unfortunate. And they're right next to each other. So you see the towns, Belchertown, Athol.
Oh, God.
Like, you're a schmuck. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to name a town, fuck you town.
Right.
Which would actually be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But the this book is interesting. I haven't come to the full conclusion because I'm about 65% done. And I haven't had too much time this week to breeze through it. But I was shocked to find out the amount of mercury kids were given.
Mm.
And then these pesticides. And then they really amped up the pesticides because of the gypsy moths.
What are gypsy moths?
Those are... they're just shitty moths.
Okay.
That were brought over from a French guy.
Okay.
I'll have to like look it all up to remember the names. But here's the short premise. Guy comes over from France post the Civil War, but wanted to come over during the Civil War because there was all sorts of problems with cotton and getting cotton fabrics. Cotton is produced in the South. So people, entrepreneurial people are like, well, we'll make more silk. And so he came and studied in Boston and wanted to produce an affordable, easy method of silk. So he's experimenting with different moths that produce silk, or the caterpillars. And so the gypsy moth was one, and then he had them contained, and then they just blew all over the place. This was like right outside of Boston, probably okay. close to Lawrence where yeah. you grew up. And then the gypsy moths just wreaked havoc. They literally will eat through, it was like July, and they will just eat through an entire tree.
Oh my God.
Like all the leaves. So there's reports of all these neighborhoods that looked like winter in July because you'd see them crawling. There was another epidemic of these things when I was a kid in Connecticut, because I looked it up because I was like, wait, I remember crazy gypsy moths so bad that you'd see them, like a whole swath of them crawling up a tree where it looked like the tree was like crawling, like right out of God. A dystopian bug horror movie.
That's disgusting.
And it turned out like that time frame that I remember them was like one of the
How
peaks.
How old are you again?
I'm 140. Yeah. This was in the 80s okay, when it peaked yeah. again. And then I think there was another one in the 90s. But anyhow, so they were like, there was a pesticide called Paris Green
yeah.
that they were like, let's just up it and let's spray everything with Paris Green. Which also gave people the symptoms of metal toxicity. But then what was happening is people were having paralysis of their lower legs. So it was all these same symptoms of polio, and that wasn't a virus.
Right.
So I think the premise is, I think what he's opening up, but I'll get back to the pod when I finish it, is that the narrative where people are always like, but polio medicine, because we're not seeing polio. And then he's explaining, breaking down all these other ties of the symptom and how the virus, to actually get the virus, is very, very hard. And that virus has to get into your spinal cord, and then it has to create little lacerations and on your lower spinal cord. But it was horrific. Whatever fucking is causing it, that it was awful. And then there was outbreaks in New York City, and then you start reading about the sanitation in New York in the early 1900s, and you're like, oh
yeah,
it's like a scene out of that movie Gangs in New York, but sounds actually worse,
right?
Which I enjoyed that movie.
I've never seen it.
That Scorsese film,
yeah,
it's pretty good. I think, I don't know, let's see if it stands the
is
test
Daniel
of time.
Day in that,
yeah. And, okay. You know, Leonardo.
Okay.
Old Leo, who's now just famous for memes.
The classic Django Unchained face.
I wonder now if people run into him, they're like, oh, that's that meme guy. And they yeah. don't have the context.
Probably our child's generation. I think that's when Leo's just going to be, I don't want to say obsolete, but...
No, he's too. I'm a fan of his, and he too will get to a point where you're like, not another movie. And then you realize that it's 2045 and they've cloned everybody. So every movie is going to be him, Al Pacino.
Yeah. Brad Pitt. Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. Probably Brad
Meryl
Pitt.
Streep.
Meryl Streep will still 2045, 26. Reese Witherspoon, yeah. She'll dominate every single television show. I know I bitch about this every episode, but yeah, let's just clone them, or they don't even have to clone them. They just CGI them now really well.
Yep.
And that's it. They're like, so if you decided you're moving to LA to like, oh, I'm going to be an actor, or I'm a woman in particular, but even a guy, cause it'd all be, you know, those same five dudes, you're going to be out of luck. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't...
So you might as well just move to the sticks somewhere.
Sometimes I feel hopeful that there will be a renaissance and that all these actors are just going to retire.
No.
Maybe go behind the scenes.
They probably all sold their souls to the devil. And part of that contract is you have to just keep working.
Oh my God.
To die. That's why like the Rolling Stones are still doing it. Bob Dylan is still actually playing music. I don't even know. You know?
Yeah, but I've never met somebody that went to a Bob Dylan concert and said it was good.
I
so
saw Bob
I don't
Dylan's.
Think I'll ever do that.
It was okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I was living with somebody that
yeah,
thought he was all right.
With someone.
I never
mean, it
asked.
Wasn't the best show that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't Motley
Crue. Well, he's so legendary that you'd think that, you know, he'd be able to... He just smokes too many cigarettes. I don't think he has the same vocal range that he did in the 60s and 70s.
Probably not. He's old, but he wrote amazing music that will live on for a long time. And he activated something in the sound current.
Yeah.
And he's had a lot of access for someone that's not even a great singer. So more power to him. I'm a Bob Dylan fan.
I love Bob Dylan.
Yeah, well, you should see a show before you...
I probably should before he dies. Even Joni Mitchell, I don't think she has the same pipes, but I should probably see her show before she dies.
Knock yourself out. I don't need to see Joni Mitchell. I know people are like, really? There's like a lot of bands. I went on about the Foo Fighters, and then somebody messaged me, who we love and adore. I sort of want to call them out.
Well, I want him to put together a compilation of songs for us to listen to understand.
I don't want
why.
I don't know. If you're listening, don't listen to her. I don't, you know, I really, this is one thing I learned, and I think I mentioned this before, but I have a friend who is a big higher up in huge music management. And he said, never be too cool to just like what you like.
Yeah.
So I support people liking what they like, but I also would encourage exploring a lot more. I've been kind of shocked living in LA, where you think, oh, where there are a lot of like art sort of conscious, quote, hip people. And then I'm amazed how many people, yourself included, that are really familiar with like Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber and Beyonce and Hanson and things like that.
Yeah.
And
I'm still a millennial.
We just watched that Velvet Underground documentary, and it really gave me a lot of despair.
Talk more about your despair.
There's no more art.
Yeah.
And I was very inspired and then just left hopeless because I was like, this isn't happening.
Mm.
It's just, it's TikTok, it's Post Malone, and then kids that think the way to make it is to get face tattoos. Which I don't think look good. But
that's, you know, the one thing that as a mother, I don't think I'm going to be very supportive of if our child Malone. Gets a face tattoo.
I wanted to get a tattoo when I was 10. And my dad shut it down. I thought he was an uptight dick about it.
What do you want to get?
AC/DC.
Ooh, okay.
A stick and poke AC/DC tattoo is 10.
Stick and poke too?
Yeah.
Who would do it?
Just biker people somehow. I knew that were like our neighbors.
Okay.
I had a friend. He had a stick and poke tattoo. It said Dave.
Did so his parents do it or something?
Well, he told me his dad was in prison. I swear I talked about this kid. But anyhow, I really wanted that. I wanted an AC/DC tattoo at 10.
Wow.
But my dad's logic was, you may not always like AC/DC.
That's true.
Which was pretty, I was like, even at 10, I was like, that is pretty logical. I don't love AC/DC, but I don't dislike them. I mean, it's pretty catchy.
I mean, music. I think now if you had that tattoo on your, where would you put it, by the way? Did you have a spot?
As a 10-year-old? Yeah, just on your arm.
Okay, like, you want it on
right
your
below
shoulder.
Your shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, so if you had an AC/DC tattoo that you got when you were 10, I think that that would be a story that you'd tell.
It probably,
and probably just, have a lot of pride around.
And a stick and poke. Like,
yeah.
Like a real man.
Yeah, totally.
although your sister has a bunch of stick and pokes.
Yeah, she does.
If I were to get a tattoo, it would just be meaningless stick and pokes. Gibberish. Yeah. I like gibberish tattoos.
Well, they're all gibberish at the end of the day.
To me, when I see tattoo sleeves, I usually think, oh, that is a well-constructed piece of, quote, art. That a kid who graduated with a degree in, you know, a Bachelor of Fine Arts, then went to a master's degree program and now does tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's a chef who uses tweezers.
Yeah.
That's so I want to avoid all of that and all tattoos with sleeves or chefs with sleeves and tweezers.
Do you know that Iggy Pop and Madonna, neither of them have tattoos?
And neither do I, and
neither
which is as tattoo as it gets.
Yeah, pretty hardcore.
So I wanted one in the 90s for sure, like an Eye of Horus.
Yeah.
I would have not regretted it, but I never did it. I don't know.
I mean, at this point, I have two, and I'm just like, whatever about it.
I don't actually dislike, kind of like tattoos, actually.
I like tattoos, too.
I just, like, when I see, like, someone who's had, like, prison tattoos, like, buddies of mine, like, I'm like, oh, those seem cool.
Mm.
But it's when people have a whole narrative of this long story of how meaningful it is, like a Post Malone face tattoo.
Yeah.
But really, I'm just ranting about my despair of watching The Velvet. Oh, yeah,
let's go back to your despair.
Well, watching the Velvet Underground documentary and then realizing that John Cale was, like, doing all this experimental sound with, like, harmonics and hums and drone sounds and worked with these people. And I was like, oh, this is – they were really doing – far out stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how at least how they portrayed Andy Warhol as just relentless artistic work ethic.
Yeah.
And he was always producing and creating and just using his imagination. And I just, the sounds.
But he also gathered this network of artists in his space, in his factory. They were his muses.
And he has a prominent six in his numerology, which I was going to put, Gina wanted to put it in the numerology
I was
book.
Dying. I was like, he's the perfect example of a six.
And so why is that? Why is the number six?
Well, for me, six is the center of the tree, and it's this networker. And they create, I also love the interpretation of it's the harmony of the beauty of the cosmos. And I felt like, through Andy Warhol's vision, he created this harmony of all these different... Well, actually, wait. Let me go back for a second.
Someone tried to murder him. I don't know how harmonious
No. I wanted... What I thought was really interesting... There's so many different things about Andy Warhol and Six. But even if you look at pop art and his repetition of these screen printings, and you look at the number six, six is all about consistency. So he had created this model, and he consistently... basically printed them off and sold them for millions of dollars, I'm sure, in his lifetime.
I don't think at that
time. I'm pretty sure, probably in the high hundreds of thousands.
In the 60s?
Not in the 60s, but I think 70s and 80s.
He died in like the 80s. Pretty young.
Did he die in the 80s?
Look it up.
I thought he died in the 90s, but yeah. Well, or maybe. Like 87.
Or maybe he was like 50-something. Died in 87. I was right.
I was right. I just said 87.
No, you said the 90s.
Okay.
And then you backtracked.
But anyway, I guess I should have researched Andy Warhol. I didn't know we were going to talk about him, but I recall him having sold his screen printings for so much money.
Well, but what time period?
I don't know. Probably, I would say the 70s and 80s.
Well, good for him. But
but that's not really what I meant. I meant the repetition of his artwork.
I want to go deeper into six. Okay. When Andy Warhol, in a way, is totally relevant to six, in the concept I want to touch on, but also a great example, even though he didn't make the book and will make advanced numerology. So that's either numerology book two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Because the number six is like the energy of having a congregation. And he is holding court. He had like his church, he had his congregation, and what was it, the factory or whatever?
Yeah.
And so that's what six is. Six has to do with the letter vow, which relates to the Hierophant card. The Hierophant is the spiritual teacher, and you know, that's the expounder of the mysteries, and that symbol is a nail. And that nail connects. This is one of the reasons six is a connector, is because that nail, you use a nail to bind a picture onto a wall, for example, or it connects and it binds a structure, right? These two pieces of wood are nailed together, but you have to abstract all these and let your consciousness just flow with it. But he had a congregation. So he was a great example of a six. I just assume that a lot of people wouldn't put any of those references together. So for the first book, I wanted to put in celebrity examples that were they were like a living example. For example, the Dalai Lama has a lot of sixes, and six is called the meditative intelligence and is also considered the person of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dalai Lama is like the archetype of that, even in pop culture. So that was a very attainable, easy reference.
Yeah.
I wanted, but it would be fun to do or even write numerology of celebrities going deeper as a way to teach about the number, obviously. But yeah. But I like that all of this art was getting done for the sake of it. The people were smoking.
Inside,
They
indoors.
were probably fucking each other.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what these kids are doing. Like, we look around our closest sort of big
Kids these
town.
days.
Yeah, like we're looking at Middlebury College. I'm like, what a bunch of sensitive squares.
Yeah.
They're not doing art. They're not smoking. They're not fucking.
They kind of just seem like smart jocks to me.
They probably are all smart jocks.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever, good for them. I don't think Middlebury College is known as like an art school or something, but they do
No.
have like a performing arts program. All
And a
I'm
writing
saying is
program, but yeah.
these guys gave me hope. And then the despair is I'm not artsy and cool enough. I'm having a kid, and where like I want the kid to see and experience more art, and I'm not
Which,
doing shit. Like, oh, I write and I teach,
yeah.
and it's creative stuff. And I'm in like communications, basically, some level of
Yeah,
media,
you have a
books,
master's in
videos.
communications. An honorary master's of communication.
No, I know.
No, I'm saying it's honorary, like you were given it. You didn't have to go through any schooling for it.
Nobody gave me a degree, honorary,
Okay, but you're talking
dishonorary.
about wanting things to be artsy and cool, and I just wanted to do a naked photo shoot that you just completely shut it down. So.
I like the idea of a naked twig pregnancy photo shoot with twigs and sticks.
I
We have a lot of neighbors, a lot of American
know.
flags. There's boats, there's hunters out there duck hunting.
Yeah.
It's not that private,
Yeah, that's true.
relatively speaking,
It's
even
probably a lot of
though
people that own binoculars
I own binoculars
for
now.
bird watching.
No, I have Chaga Watch. I watch Chaga grow, which a big one takes about 50 years.
Wow.
So that's why I'm out there. I'm all out there all day. I'm looking for naked women doing art photo shoots
Yeah.
on the shores of New York
You don't have to
State.
go very far for that.
But anyhow, I thought that was a pretty good documentary overall. I think that you're right. The filming was a little, it looked like a mood board, like a pitch deck
Yeah,
that was in
the
motion.
editing, it, where they just had different, they had two juxtaposed shots where you're seeing a picture or a video of Lou Reed staring into the camera for 5 minutes, and then it's this whole other storyline going on, and it was cool in the beginning, but then 2 hours later you're like, okay,
Yeah, they
can we pause and
literally,
actually look at this photograph because it's fascinating.
there was literally a seizure warning in the
Yeah.
beginning.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we could pick definitely the way it was made. I thought the story was pretty cool.
I like
John
that
Cale is
director
awesome.
too, Todd Haynes.
Okay, I'm gonna move out of this and talk mystical
Yeah,
stuff.
what time is it? Okay, yeah, we should really get going.
Well, so a couple of things happening astrologically. One is Venus retrograde,
Oh, okay.
which
I like when this
happens
pops up.
Venus retrograde.
Yeah, because I have a lot of female friends, so there's always a male in the picture, and then or some sort of romance, and then you're eavesdropping on conversations, and you're like, well, Venus is retrograde, so.
So it goes retrograde December 19th to January 29th. So this is what happens. Venus retrogrades every little under two, about a year, every year and a half-ish. I think sometimes it's a little longer, closer to 2 years. And this is the, like, we always talk about Mercury retrograde because it just happens more often. Mercury is a pretty fast moving planet, although Venus is reasonably fast as well. But every little under 2 years, it starts appearing as if it's going backwards.
Okay.
And so, whatever planet's going retrograde, you have to take the lessons of that planet and start to say, well, what does it mean if these concepts start going backwards in my life? And that's why, like, I joke and call it like the season of the X. So Venus is about romantic love, sensuality, it's creativity, it's beauty. Like, just my eyeballs like this. You know, it's sexy. You know, you can look at the archetype of the goddess Venus, but it really is coming from, you know, Venus as the planet. And so it's all this creativity, all this intuition. It's pretty artsy. So maybe I'm picking up on that, thinking I'm just not artsy enough. I want to be a good artsy parent.
Yeah.
Without the cigarettes, though. I like to romanticize it, but I don't smoke.
No.
And I don't condone smoking, but I don't have a judgment if you do smoke. But so now Venus is going to start appearing to go backwards. So a lot of things start to come up, and I mentioned on the pod because I can't stand that movie, La La Land.
Oh yeah,
I thought it was atrocious, and it just kept winning award after award after award after award.
I'm like,
oh my god, like some American jock boy loves jazz, and a girl wants to be an actor, but she failed because she had a tough job at a coffee shop where people wanted a gluten-free scone. I can't have my day off. I'm going to go back and live with my parents.
Yeah.
It just, it's not a story to me, but my theory was it won all those awards and people loved it because Venus was retrograde. Mm-hmm. And so what happens with Venus retrograding is things become more valuable. On its core spiritual level, Venus is the planet of self-worth, of true value, and true prosperity. Its sort of shadow side is being duped by things that you think are prosperous or true to you, or not valuing yourself enough, thinking that you're a worthless piece of shit and you're just going to be fat and alone and single forever and you'll never achieve anything and you might as well just give up on life and, you know, sign up in line at the pharmacy and live in a trailer somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are the dark sides of it. But what starts happening with Venus retrograde is, A, definitely people from your past will show up, especially, like, that's why the joke is the season of the ex, is ex lovers, boyfriends, girlfriends, etc., will start to come out of the woodwork and just show up. And not always that, oh, we want to like get back together, but all of a sudden, like, oh, you know, I haven't talked to you in 10 years. I was just checking up and they're DMing you or something. So that's bound to happen to probably everybody listening.
Mm-hmm.
Could be friends from the past, but you know, on a personal level, this is going to be a time to really assess your genuine prosperity. And it's time to like get real with assessing what is actually true, what is actually valuable for you, like what's real. And so I think it's actually a great opportunity where that Venus energy slows down and you can sort of re-examine. And that's what you're supposed to utilize retrograde planets for. It's more introspective. So if you think for a minute, you can put the pause button. And so it's a magic, you know, little gift from the universe to say, oh, hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at this. Like, does what serves, what doesn't serve a purpose in your life? What's cool is it also starts during the last like couple of days of the 5 year. So you really could just really take advantage of assessing what can you destroy that isn't of true value, that's going to really give you true fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so the shadowish side of Venus is looking outside of yourself for true fulfillment because you have no true self-worth.
Right.
And so when you don't have that self-worth, it's easy to project that onto things that your eyeballs and your mind thinks it wants. Shiny new boyfriend, mm-hmm. shiny new girlfriend, shiny new car, whatever it is. And so, and when it's retrograde, though, it'll make everything look sexier, right?
Yeah.
So, you're going to buy a house. Like, that's why I caution against making big purchases or even purchases in general. Be clear and be grounded about it. So, you know, you should look at, for that 40-ish day period, how much are you chasing shiny objects?
Okay.
And are those shiny objects, do they actually hold value? But if you want to grow on a core emotional level, it's time for you to get real. How much do you value yourself?
Well, I was thinking, because the holidays, it can be a time of debauchery where you're just drinking a lot and eating sugar. And I feel like it can seem like a materialistic time. And maybe that a lot of that illusory success can be an outside gifts to yourself or to give to others.
Well, it doesn't always happen at this time of year, but sure. I mean, people overdo it with the holidays. People will extra overdo it. So the hangover factor will be even stronger this year. Because that's a debauchery is a part of Venus. You know, debauchery is pretty much just overindulging in something that is giving you temporary satisfaction that you can't get enough of because you think it feels good in the moment, and then you're left, you know, bankrupt and hungover and spent, and your life sucks.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
and then it's like, Happy New Year.
and then, yeah, that's the, even the Seven of Cups in the tarot and the Thoth deck is called debauchery. Mm-hmm. Now, I would have named it something else, but because that card shows how obviously gross it all is. So, you know, all that glitters is not gold. That's really all you got to remember. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm buying a new car, this is why almost every relationship that starts during Venus retrograde is doomed for failure.
Hey now, didn't we start in a Venus retrograde?
No.
We didn't?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
You moved in with me during Venus retrograde, but which I thought, oh, this could all implode.
Mm.
So I was like, might as well get the most out of it while I can. That's how I go into every relationship.
Yeah, okay.
I'm old enough. They fail. They all failed. So now I'm happily married.
Now you're an optimist.
Yes. I wasn't a pessimist. I was actually, that was very optimistic. I wasn't even negative. I was just like, not getting so caught up.
That was maybe realistic.
No, it's just not even. I was actually quite enthusiastic and quite optimistic.
Yeah.
But I just was conscious enough to say, well, it is Venus retrograde. This might be a bad idea. But we had already been together. So it wasn't like we had just met on Venus retrograde.
No.
Like I know someone who started a relationship on Venus retrograde. And I think Mercury was retrograding. And then it was like an eclipse. Mm-hmm. Turns out that relationship didn't work out.
Yeah.
And so, and one person became so obsessed, which is what Venus is. Mm-hmm. So Venus is where you've become so obsessed with somebody or something or whatever it is, drugs, alcohol, chocolate cake. But it all comes down to you're becoming obsessed with those outside things because there's something deficient within you, that you don't value.
Yeah.
So I'm really going to encourage everyone to take a pause and say, okay, you should value yourself a lot more. You should, it's really a lot of self-love, and, it's a very kind energy. It can be very opulent in a very healthy way. So it's just Venus is so much in our face on planet Earth that most people don't hold the space well enough, because it's also jealous, it's comparison, right? Like you assess when one assesses value, their self-worth based on how they see other people.
Right.
It's like all these kids probably at TikTok in a way watching Post Malone videos and thinking, oh, this is great. I live at home. I'm going to get face tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not rock stars.
Yeah.
They're comparing themselves to something outside of themselves, you know? So when people model themselves after outside stuff, that's very anti-magic.
Mm.
That's why magic always emphasizes, like, you don't worship teachers. You don't worship anybody. You don't have idols.
Yeah.
There might be talented people that inspire you. Certainly inspired by the Velvet Underground and John Cale.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy Warhol and many other artists. But I'm not going to get a John Cale haircut or Lou Reed glasses and or an Andy Warhol something style. I like the way that all those guys looked.
Yeah.
You know. So how much are you how much is your worth coming from comparing yourself to others? Like, where do you struggle with self-worth and value, Gina?
Well, I definitely do compare myself to others. So that's something. I also can be very self-deprecating, which is anti-prosperity. So I'm working on that. And then sometimes I just want to, you know, go on the real and then just buy something really expensive.
So there's you things. Feel better.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like there is something about having, for me, I'm like, what is it? What does this brand say if I own it? And why am I, I'm getting, I don't indulge like that, because now that you can actually see what I'm spending,
in the real, yeah, but you know where you did indulge?
Oh, in the 5 pound bag of cacao chips. Yeah.
That was a lot.
Yeah, that was a little out of control.
All of a sudden, this package comes in, and our midwife, I guess, is really into cacao. Like
yeah.
Raw. I don't know when drinking hot chocolate became like a like huge renowned spiritual practice by like the cult of the flat-brimmed hat people with their copal, Palo Santo,
and sage.
But they're probably buying my book. So, and no disrespect to any real tradition of it all, but I find it interesting that just what is chocolate now is cacao, and it's such a whole thing. But thanks to David Avocado Wolf, years ago, he turned chocolate into a superfood. I do like it because it's unsweetened. There's no sugar. And it's I could amazing. Just do a version with a little monk fruit.
No, it's my daily ritual. I turn on Gregorian chants. I talk to the baby. We meditate
I was
over
looking
the cacao.
For the invoice.
We do a cacao ceremony every day. Wait, invoice of what?
You're just drinking,
the 5 pound bag.
Yeah, you're just drinking hot chocolate. Yeah. You're not doing a ceremony. You're enjoying hot chocolate.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm thinking about I'm making it very meditative and mindful is what I'm saying.
Okay. I mean, you're probably mindful. It's like when people try to tell me they meditate when they're driving. I'm like, you're not meditating.
I would hope someone's
you're
not
like
meditating while they're driving.
You're free-form thinking, and you're relaxed. And
yeah.
You're meditating. Yeah, so you overindulged in 5 pounds. That's a lot.
I go through a little I overindulge every now and again. But you overindulge too.
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm a Scorpio, Gina. It's my God-given right.
You're
I can take what I want, when I want, how I want, as much as I want.
Yeah. So I...
you know, I've been broke for a lot of years, so I'm making up for past times. Although I did spend a lot of money on... consumables that gave me temporarily feel good.
Like what? Should I start listing them?
No, everyone listening knows what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. So that's where a lot of my money went back in the day. So anyhow.
Oh, back in the day. I thought you meant recently. Okay.
No, I bought the binoculars. Because it was like a Cyber Monday sale. They were like $500. They were like a couple $200.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just take it. I want it. They'll last forever.
Yeah.
And I want to use them to look for celestial bodies. Because you can look at the moon through binoculars. So it looks really cool.
But where are you a deficient seven? What's up with you?
You mean Venus?
Yeah.
I don't have any sevens.
Venus, sorry.
Well, you know, a lot of my issues have been probably my self-worth, and there's not probably too many men listening, but I'll tell you this. There's not enough, I think, positive message for men, and I feel like what a lot of people don't understand is a lot of men, which the suicide, at least in America, is mostly committed by men. Mm-hmm. Part of the argument is like, well, men will do something more drastic, like not just take a bottle of pills and try to fall asleep
yeah.
or someone will find you. But is your self-worth as a man? And if you're like looking at society, where as a man by a certain age, you have to have achieved certain levels of success and sort of honor and prestige on some level of recognition or fame, certain amounts of money, things like that. If you allow those societal narratives, and I feel like there's not enough, I just don't think there's enough spoken about for men and how men often feel like they're failures, especially by a certain age of like, oh, I wasn't able to really accomplish anything. And so am I just like a putz loser?
Yeah.
And it can actually be more challenging than people ever will give credit to, because we live in a society that's very part of our society now has become very anti-man and very dismissive of mm-hmm. men's or the concerns of men. And so terms like, you know, male toxicity or mansplaining are really horrible, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's the lack of masculinity that makes someone who's male toxic. And so part of me years ago sort of fell into that a little bit. And I'm not like Mr. Macho guy or anything, but I felt like a real failure and nothing was lining up, and just financially, emotionally, things like that. And, you know, it was my buying into the societal narrative of what a man, what you should have accomplished.
Yeah.
And so even, you know, years ago, I was like, oh, well, I haven't really accomplished anything. I don't have those checks. I don't have status or a huge bank account or something or a nice car. And I let it become so invalidating to me there was a lot of other factors, but that's where I came out of a lot of, literal suicidal depression.
But would you say that having some of those things that you just listed now is what makes you feel successful, or that wouldn't you go to maybe your spiritual practice and other things that shift the mentality? Or do you actually think that society, those things are of value to a certain degree?
No, they're totally worthless when you are relying on the outside thing for the validation.
Yeah.
You'll achieve those things when you become internally, when you internally validate yourself. The rest of it shows up. Mm-hmm. I finally let it all go. Yeah. I didn't give a shit. And I was free.
That's when I showed up.
No, you showed up years later, actually.
Oh. Oh, really?
Yeah, I felt good about myself when I met you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I broke it by just letting go, and I sort of surrendered. A lot of that had to do with me getting clean, all tied into all of that, which maybe I'll talk about more someday. I'm like kind of open, not open about it. It's pretty personal. I think I would almost do an episode about it just for the message for other people that are struggling.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a whole illusion of myself. I'd always been rooted in some spiritual practice, which honestly is in some level helped me probably from not committing suicide. Because the magical teaching is like, it doesn't, like, no matter what you do, you're not going to get out of this. You're not going to escape it. So now you're going to go through this whole, like, cosmic logistics nightmare to try to reincarnate into the same arena of circumstance and try to relive it. And so there's no way out. But, you know, that was a little bit in the back of my mind. But no, it just, there was a letting go. I didn't really care. And then things started to really build up for that. And then a higher destiny really lined up. I also never thought that I could do what I do as a career. And so I do feel fortunate in that.
Yeah.
So all of those things help. So I feel like over time, I just really lined up to what my right purpose and my right work was. That's when you showed
through up. Through an element of surrender, it sounds like.
All through surrender. And I just started doing that for a number of years. I didn't know exactly. I was into all of this. I was working low level jobs, and I just kept my meditations and my practice. That's where I got a lot of fulfillment. And then it just started to open up. Mm-hmm. There's like, you go through these breakthroughs, and the breakthroughs weren't connected in a logical fashion. Well, I have a degree in this now, and I worked 10 years in this industry, and now I built that. Now I have my consulting firm. I was Instacarting and working at a freaking health food store for no money at, you know, in my 40s, like, what the hell? Because I've had bigger jobs. But I stayed focused on my prosperity meditations, my yoga, my internal work. And I made my professional job like a commitment like I never have in my life. My spiritual evolution internally from the inside out. I focused on that. The outside just starts to show up when you actually do that.
Yeah.
But if you're building all of this stuff on the outside without a foundation, foundation and a core. It's not, it's a sandcastle. And it'll just blow away, or the waves will take it. Mm. And this is where people sabotage. And that's the thing, that Venus, which is the number seven, which is also the aura, people sabotage. Because their aura isn't strong enough, so they haven't had that sort of built. You have to work in all these different dimensions.
Yeah.
But I started with the inner one, and I just let go and said, okay, things will start to open. And I wasn't just aimless. Mm. I changed my vibrational frequency through letting go and falling in love with my life.
Yeah. You know. And then I showed up.
Yes.
Okay. I'm like, when do I appear? So now we're in a Venus retrograde. What are some things that maybe people should, and you may have already mentioned this, but what are some things that people maybe should be cautious of?
Well, Venus retrograde means penis retrograde. So nobody's getting laid. I think the simplest thing, I think the inner work that I said is really important. So it's a real time to assess that. So if you're one of the five guys listening, you're wonderful. Mm-hmm. And not compare male and female. Because of course women do it too. We have a society where women are forced to sort of compare themselves. But don't be it's impulsive. Don't buy anything expensive without really being practical and real. And does it look too good to be true? Maybe it is. And are you just chasing a shiny object?
I saw a good tweet by that guy, Zuby Music, and he says he doesn't buy something unless he knows he can buy three of them.
That works for him. You know, I remember an episode of that show Taxi that I saw as a kid, and there was a character who was really rich, and she said, you know, I didn't realize I was rich until I was looking at a hat and I couldn't decide which color, and then I realized I'll just buy both.
Yeah.
So I buy both.
Yeah.
And I'm not rich like she was, but it little things, mm-hmm. like soap. Like, yeah. I can't decide which Dr. Bronner's flavor, and I'm like, well, you know, I could actually buy three of flavors that I enjoy, and then I have three times the soap. I like, it'll last long. I just, you know, then I'm like, I'd like to change it up.
Mm-hmm.
So little things.
I have a question too.
But I'm not finished with the questions. Oh, don't make any impulsive shiny purchases. That's the big thing. So it doesn't mean you not buy anything. Just assess it. Just take a little more time and a little more diligence. Are you just like, ooh, I want this shiny new thing?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, get into all the relationships you want. Just be aware that one of you may be like, think that you're madly in love, and maybe you're not. Mm-hmm. You got to go into it the way I did, which is optimistically, realistically, and unattached.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Are you done with answering that question?
Yeah.
Okay. What are your thoughts on being born during a Venus retrograde?
Well, being born any retrograde planet, like, it's, I mean, on some level, I hear a lot of people are like, oh, I'm just used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of have to think about that more. I don't get too mental about it. Like, I was born during Saturn retrograde, and I feel like a lot of things have, throughout my life, have felt harder or slower, or I didn't apply enough work.
Well, I was wondering, because my friend told me there's a theory that if you're born on a Mercury retrograde, you could be dyslexic. And I was thinking a Saturn retrograde could also, you can maybe attribute dyslexia.
I think we should just dedicate a whole podcast to medical diagnosis and psychological
diagnosis. I know, this isn't a good...
Just so we get sued. Well, Saturn's bones. So, yeah, you could have put a lot of health astrology. I don't always like to do that because people... like, hold on to things, but...
Have you broken a lot of bones?
Never.
Okay. I'm only asking because if the baby comes early, then he'll be born in a Venus retrograde.
It might be.
Yeah.
It's what he's choosing, man. Let it go. What are you going to do?
Nothing.
he'll think everything's beautiful. Maybe Venus retrograde's, like, highly optimistic.
Oh, that's good.
Right? It's just like, I love you. I love you. Oh, this is beautiful, right?
Mm.
Like, it's childlike joy.
Aww.
You know, that's like one way to look at it.
Yeah.
It's like that syndrome. It's called Williams. I think it's Williams syndrome.
I think my dad has it.
Cocktail disease, where you naturally produce like a low level of ecstasy and high doses of oxytocin. So you really make bonds and everything's really exciting and cool and inspiring. So, but you know, Venus is shinier. So everything's prettier, shinier, you know.
He probably loves the beige toys. He's like, this is the most beautiful beige wooden toy.
Yeah, it might. Like, it'll all be cool. So that's like Venus retrograde.
Okay.
In a good note. So that's just nice. Look at, do some damn art.
Okay.
It's not enough art. I'm saying that to myself.
Yeah.
Well, I did sign up for a photography class.
Right. And I was going to have you photograph me because I, you know, I don't have the setup to do self-portraiture with this analog equipment that I have.
I think it's cool that you do all that analog. I just want to learn how to use that damn digital camera because there's too many settings and buttons and it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to be like a computer engineer to take a picture. So I'm going to take a class.
Yeah, just play around with
it. I think I'll be taking the class starts Venus retrograde. So I'll think all my work, everyone will be like, this is amazing. I'll look at other people's works. Artwork looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Films look better. So if you're in the business of selling something, great time to market, put it out there. Everything you do will look sexier, brighter, better.
We should pitch a show.
You know, yeah, great time to do that. Everyone's just like, my God, I love it. I love it. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So it's a great time for yeses. Just be mindful of what are you saying yes to.
Okay.
You know, Venus is not a planet that's going to fucking kill you. It's not Pluto.
No.
You know, worst case, you get a little spun. You're like, I'm so in love with you. It didn't work out. But then you're like, wait, but I had a really fun time while I was with this person and I got laid.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
oh my God, win-win.
People get so attached and they freak out and then they create a false narrative of the soulmate, all that stuff. We have that episode. If you haven't tuned in, listen to the soulmate.
Yeah, the twin flame.
Twin flame disaster, man. I think Venus is super creative and also must be Venus retrograde because I was thinking about this, though, especially in relation to men, but because body positivity is really taken off and I think that's great. And I actually have a ton of clients that are plus models.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, though. All of those women are very gorgeous. Like, they're hot.
Yeah.
They're just ultra curvy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. But I feel like this body positivity, body acceptance, it's only for women.
Mm.
Like, I've never seen like a big, hefty guy on the cover of anything.
Sports Illustrated.
Well, like a big football player, they're all muscle. GQ. So I don't, it's for women only.
Yeah.
To be like, well, I can be like super plus and I can love myself.
Of course.
I can Lizzo it up.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and good for her. And it's cool. But I'll tell you, most of these women, like these models that I've known throughout the years, they all have like super svelte boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
They're ultra in shape. So I don't see it. So where are the, like, you know, the heavy set dad bod guys with shirtless on
the
cover
I'm curvy
of
a
magazine.
And you're dad bod, so
that's why I podcast, Gina. But I'm actually insecure about my weight. Has been one of those things. So it's something I struggle with.
Yeah.
You know. So I'm like, oh, these women are cool. They're like, the ones that I know, and they're working at very high levels, are fucking kicking ass. And it ultimately comes through their absolute self-worth and self-value.
I feel like mentally I should feel inspired by those types of women. And I do, but there is still a part of me where I'm like, oh, I still want to be super fit in a size.
Well, you're not.
If I had a size 6 or something.
Yeah, but. It's because you're not inspired by yourself. It's an internal mechanism.
But I'm really into being pregnant right now. Like, I'm super into this belly. And I'm like, oh, I could be pregnant for years.
let's have this baby.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm saying is my experience talking to a lot of these people and interacting and even going to fashion shows was the level of true inner confidence.
Yes.
That came through. They're all very attractive. That is the thing, though. But a lot of it is just the level of confidence.
Yeah, how they carry themselves. It. It's pretty remarkable.
So more power to you. Or whether you're too skinny. So I think it's very cool that, you know, we're sort of opening those doors and breaking those barriers where people can ultimately, whatever it is, I think the higher teaching that's trying to happen is it's okay to be who you are, you know, unless you go against the narrative. But like Venus, again, Venus retrograde is like, oh, like we bought like this grand TV. It looked good. It's a little bigger, too big for this place. It's hard to tell that. And we wanted to go big and have fun. It was a logical purchase, but it's like thinking, okay, well, I have this great TV, but then finding out that in 6-7 months, the TV doesn't work, and that the only way you can have a working TV is you actually have to get a new TV at least once a year to every 6 months, and you think that that's valuable.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, it's science. And science says in order to have TV, you have to get a working TV, you have to have a new TV every 6 months.
Yes.
And for, you know, the rest of your life now. And so Venus retrograde will put you in that loop. So you're like, oh, I'm going to buy this again because it doesn't work, but I believe it works.
Right.
So it's the illusion of success.
Yes.
So, you know, or the illusion of science. You know, it's all about illusions.
Know where you're going with this analogy.
No, I'm going right there. It's the seven of the old school seven of cups is the lord of illusory success. And you think something is successful based on its merits working. It's like your iPhone. You know, if it didn't work in a year, you'd be like, okay, well, I don't think I should have to get another one. So, yeah, it's Venus retrograde. Let's see how it plays out.
Okay.
For the planet.
Okay.
But mostly Venus, it's no harm done. People are going to buy some stupid things. They're going to hook up with an ex. You know, not a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of fun at the end of the day.
It is a big deal, though, if you feel so worthless about yourself that you can't create the prosperity that you need in your life, or you feel like you're such a worthless piece of crap that you commit suicide. So on one level, it can be deadly. Or you have just squandered your entire life consuming substances for that quick fix, you know. So where are you quick fixing yourself? Just apply a little love to yourself, to others, you know. We're still in, we got a minute of Sag. That'll be Capricorn, I think, or almost Capricorn by then. But, you know, just look at it. Great time. Self-assessment.
Yeah. Do we want to wrap this up and talk about your coming to New York?
Yeah. So this show is brought to you first and foremost by the 2022 numerology reports, which we are I've been working all morning on them.
Yeah.
So we have a big shipment going out. If you could do us a favor though and order them sooner than later, because Gina is having a baby and she wants to relax, and that's could be the end of January, early February. We ran them until March last year. January was really busy, and so was February. That's when it really amps up. So this is a wonderful Venus retrograde item. But yeah, so numerology reports, yes, will be in New York, but I'll be giving the talk and book signing on the 17th.
Yes. Which is a Friday.
Which is a Friday, Venus Day.
From 5 to 7 p.m.
5 to 7 at...
It's a great deal. $27, you get a copy of the book signed by Remington.
Yeah, because the book's $20.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a beautiful book, actually. So hopefully it'll be good on book sales based on how good it looks.
Yeah.
It is a thing of beauty, though. But that's all the message. I'm like, did anyone read it? So, yeah, we'll be in New York on a Venus Day signing books, talking numbers, and...
And then we also have our annual six-year workshop that's happening on Sunday, January 2nd.
Yes, that's the heavy hitter. And I will say this, that the shift of energy from a five to a six is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Four to
I'm
five is
excited.
huge, and then five to six is huge. Six to seven, it's less, it's a little smoother, it's a little gentler. So really we're working with a totally different dynamic, different concepts, and it's really an opportunity of tremendous destiny if you play your numbers right.
Let thy soul be awakened.